I'd like to welcome everyone to this webinar. We're going to be discussing some of the federal legislative activities in autism. And I'm here as a representative of the Autism Society of America, the Network of Autism Training and Technical Assistance Programs, and also representing the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community, one of the USETs. Kim Musheno is here from AUCD. We have Katie Neese from Easter Seals, Sharon Pierce from the Autism Society of America, and George Jeschen from the AUCD. And each of them will be talking about various legislative efforts. They'll be talking about some of the primary bills, some other bills that are under consideration, some of the MCHB RFAs. There's been several announcements that have been coming out as a result of some of the funding activities, some of the common issues, and then we'll be providing you with opportunities for questions and comments. So, Kim, I think you're up next.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. I just wanted to provide a little bit of an overview. First of all, can you advance to the slide two, three, actually? Three. First of all, I just wanted to, mention that we all, the three organizations that are on the call right now, work together on many issues at the national level in the areas of healthcare, employment, education, fiscal policy, family support, as well as specific autism legislation. And we are also all part of a large consortium called the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, which is a consortium of over 100 national disability organizations. And Katie Neese and I co-chair the Autism Task Force of the CCD, of which all three of us, our organizations, are a member. And there are 17 members total that include a wide range of disability organizations. And it includes organizations like Autism Speaks, the Developmental Disabilities Council, Special Education Directors, Pediatricians, the ARC-UCP, and so on. For example, ASA and Easter Seals and AUCD are working right now on an issues forum at the upcoming National Conference of State Legislatures in New Orleans this summer. We're pretty excited about that. It's their annual meeting that's attended by hundreds of state legislators and their staff, and we have an hour and a half to talk to them about autism issues. Can you go through all those? Sorry about that. I just listed some of the legislative issues that we work on together that affect all disabilities, but also affect individuals with autism. And I'm not going to go through all of these, but as we work together on these, we try to ensure that people with autism are included and are covered under these general disability laws. And then the primary federal legislation that we're working on together is the Combating Autism Act funding this year because it was signed into law already, and a new bill called the Expanding the Promise for Individuals with Autism Act. I listed a whole bunch of issues that we work on. However, with the election year, it's more politics than policy. There's not a lot done. There's a log jam of reauthorization bills and bills that we've been working on. And everybody's pretty aware of this, and we are mostly preparing for next year, for the next Congress. Although the Democrats have control of both the House and the Senate, they're in the majority, but they're not really in control because they have such a small majority. And in the Senate, it takes at least 60 votes to overcome filibusters, which has been a difficult number to reach. But, of course, an election year also presents opportunities, and we're trying to take those. We're trying to get autism in front of the political candidates and those that are running for office. We had a presidential forum with all the candidates in November in New Hampshire, and we're having a follow-up with the final two presidential candidates on July 26th, the anniversary of the ADA in Ohio. And autism will definitely be one of the questions that we ask the candidates. So basically, we are just setting the stage for the coming year. And I'll pass this on to, go ahead, George.
I just wanted to butt in here a little bit. This is George Jeschen, and let all of the participants know that your telephone lines are muted at this time, and only the lines of the panelist speakers for this session are open. There will be a question and answer period at the end where the operator will come on and ask you to designate if you have a question, and then your line will be open. In the past, when there are a large number of folks on the line, and as we understand it, there are about 73 of you that have registered for this webinar, that if we keep the lines muted, the quality of the sound is just much better than if we have open lines. Also, during the presentation, if you look on the right-hand side panel, those of you that are viewing this on your computer screens, you can actually text message a question into our office here, and we will write those down and address those questions after the presentation. So feel free to submit a question either through the text message capacity of this application, or wait until the end and we'll have some time for questions. So with that, I'd like to turn the mic over to our next speaker, Katie Bainese from Easterseal.
Thanks, George. I'm going to be speaking about the Combating Autism Act and the Expanding the Promise for Individuals with Autism Act. As you'll see, President Bush did sign the Combating Autism Act into law a year and a half ago, and we were thrilled with that action, and even more thrilled that we have an RFP out with real money to go to real activities. Last year, Congress fully funded the Combating Autism Act, and for a new piece of legislation, I think that's pretty unheard of, to not only fund it, but to fully fund it. Easterseals was primarily interested in this piece of legislation because of the money that goes to the Health Resources Services Administration, which we hope will increase the supply of people who can diagnose and serve people living with autism. We're very supportive of the other components, the NIH research and the CDC surveillance, but we're all things not being equal, we were just thrilled to see the significant dedication of resources to actually helping people living with autism today. As you'll see from the slide on number 9, there are three main components of the Combating Autism Act. One is to fund research at NIH, at the National Institutes of Health. And one of the things that's exciting about this new law is that while it's research into the genetic and biomedical aspects of autism, it's also research into other things. And we were very pleased to see Congress give NIH that direction. And to add that into the list of needed questions to have asked and answered with the funding for this dedicated to autism. The second really important piece of this legislation is the money going to CDC for surveillance and research purposes. We all use the CDC data every day, and to have it is just unbelievably helpful. Easterseals and ASA and then sharing with AUCD is developing state profiles on what's happening at the state level in terms of public policy for people living with autism. And one of the things, the information that we're getting back as we're vetting them with people in the states is that our numbers are too low. The prevalence numbers are too low. And what we're using is data that states give to the U.S. Department of Education for purposes of special education. And so I think having other ways to identify people as having autism or being on the spectrum is really important. So we're thrilled to see that CDC's efforts are continued to be supported. As Kim said, we're part of a coalition that is dedicating time and energy to see that the Combating Autism Act is fully funded. And with Congress passing its budget today, we're one step closer, so we'll see. If you go to the next slide, slide 10, you'll see a lovely picture of George Jessian and Kim and Lee Grossman and myself standing with Senator Clinton as she and Senator Wayne Allard from Colorado introduced the Expanding the Promise for Individuals with Autism Act. We lovingly refer to this bill as the YIPIA bill because that's the acronym in a slang kind of way. And Expanding the Promise of Individuals with Autism Act is just way too long. We're thrilled that we've got 20 co-sponsors in the Senate and 112 co-sponsors in the House. As you'll see, this is bipartisan legislation, which in election years is hard to come by. So we are thrilled that this legislation has that kind of support. When all of us on the phone were assisting Senator Clinton as she was putting together this piece of legislation, one of the things that we kept coming to her with saying, we need some money dedicated to increase the supply of services. We have a basic disability infrastructure with IDEA and the Rehab Act and MCH and others that help people with disabilities generally. And those are the strongest things, the strongest programs and supports for people with autism. But we know that given the prevalence that we need some extra knowledge and some extra help and expertise to meet the needs of people right now. And so the whole point of Senator Clinton's bill was to try to give money to states to help meet some very specific issues to help families living with someone with autism. A number of the things that the bill tries to do is decrease the time between when a child is diagnosed as having autism and when that child is actually receiving appropriate services. One of the things we found in the CDC information was that by the time a child is three, their parents or caregivers have suspected that their development wasn't typical. And yet oftentimes they're not diagnosed as having autism until several years later. We want to decrease that time so that kids can get diagnosed as soon as humanly possible and that they get the services they need as soon as humanly possible. So the money in Senator Clinton's bill tries to do just that. One of the things that everyone on this call and certainly we at Easter Seals know is there are not enough people out there to do this. And we absolutely critically need more people with the skill to effectively diagnose autism. And again, this legislation will do that. The bill tries to address another critical need, and that's the needs of people who are adults who have autism. Many families, and this isn't limited to people with autism, but mostly people with significant disabilities, that once they exit the school system at age 22, the kinds of supports that they need to live in the community often aren't there. And so the resources in this legislation to try to help communities build the capacity to meet the needs of these individuals. Needless to say, we think this is a really good piece of legislation. We don't think it's going to be enacted this year, although anything's possible in an election year. And we really need to demonstrate more support for these bills. So if you haven't contacted your representatives and your senators and asking them to sign on as a co-sponsor, that would be a wonderful thing to do. We've been asking for the relevant committees to consider holding a hearing on this legislation, and asking people to do that as well as signing on as a co-sponsor would be terrific. What we've heard over and over again is since the Combating Autism Act was passed in 2006, that Congress has sort of taken care of the needs of people with autism, and clearly that's would be an inaccurate presumption. assumption to make. And so we'd like to continue to push for the need for services and appropriately train personnel to deliver those services. And I think we think that's a message that Congress can and should hear. I'm going to send it back to the folks at AUCD, and we'll go from there. And I'll be happy to answer any questions at the end of the call that you may have.
Sharon, are you on the line now?
I am.
Okay.
So the next slate of bills that we're going to be talking about are bills that have kind of cropped up or emerged organically from a variety of different congressional offices. You know, whereas the first slate that Katie talked about are things that I think the autism community has really driven, is really looking to move, and then these are just opportunities that have presented themselves over the last couple of months, and just give a sense of the flavor of issues that members of Congress care about and how they see their role in addressing the needs of individuals with autism and their families. And the first bill is one that's been floating for around for a couple of years now. It's called the Teacher Education for Autistic Children Act, and it was introduced by Representative Chris Smith and Mike Doyle, who are the two co-chairs of the Congressional Autism Research and Education Task Force, or Coalition, or Caucus, or whatever they call it. And they really, I think, are probably two of the strongest champions for autism in the House of Representatives and have done a lot of different bills. You'll see those names pop up time and time again. It's currently got about 9 co-sponsors and is in the House Ways and Means Committee. And it really, it provides some incentives for teachers and paraprofessional teaching assistants and others with experience in autism spectrum disorders to get additional training by providing tax credits. So using the tax code as a way of incentivizing and covering educational expenses for teachers and paraprofessionals so that there's enough trained teachers in the classroom to address the needs of kids with autism. Kim, do you have control over the slides, or do I?
You got it.
So moving on, the Empowering Children with Autism Through Education Act is a bill that emerged during the course of debate earlier this year on the No Child Left Behind Act, might have even been last year, that Representative Yarmuth from Kentucky, who is a new member of Congress, introduced. And he is a member of the Education and Labor Committee, and so you'll see a lot of alignment between committee assignments and the way that some of these members go about addressing the needs of autism. And what we learned is that Representative Yarmuth's chief of staff, I think, has a nephew with autism. So there was a personal interest within the office and wanting to leverage their personal interest with autism combined with their committee jurisdiction and committee assignments to do more. And we worked with this office to really try and identify, you know, it calls to establish a task force to identify and disseminate evidence-based educational strategies and promising best practices, and that's all well and fine. But really working with this office to see, okay, what do we really need to get best practices out into the classrooms? And Katie and Kim and myself and others were really trying to work with Representative Yarmuth to fine-tune and refine this proposal so that if it was attached to the No Child Left Behind Act, that it would really get to the meaty needs of what he was trying to do. And unfortunately, nothing really much happened on No Child Left Behind. It was ultimately abandoned, and I think will likely not come back up until the next Congress. But I think it's just demonstrative of the interest that even freshman members of Congress have in autism. So the next slide is the Global Autism Assistance Act, and this is something that the Autism Society of America really helped to spearhead. Again, kind of based on the personal interest of members of Congress, Chris Smith is a senior member of the International Relations Committee, and recognizing that there are significant needs for individuals with autism internationally, that there's absolutely zero infrastructure and services for children with autism, especially in the developing world, this bill would establish a global health and education grant to provide services to individuals with autism and programming for children with autism, as well as support for families, educational institutions, clinics, on down the line. And it was just introduced earlier this year in February in the House, and then on International Autism Day in the Senate. And it's, you know, it doesn't have a ton of co-sponsors, but it's just, an interesting take on, you know, what the needs of individuals with autism are, not just here in the U.S., but internationally. On slide 16, the Fairness in Autism Treatment Act, and this is something that, again, was really grown organically, but I think something that we hear from a lot of our constituents, from families of children with autism or, you know, adults with autism, is that they don't really get coverage for a lot of the things that they need in terms of health insurance. And this was introduced by Congressman Robert Wexler, who's a Democrat from Florida, earlier this year and has about 5 co-sponsors so far, and would amend the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA for short, which is the federal law that governs large multi-state, multi, you know, large employer plans, private employer plans, so your GMs and your, you know, large union plans and things like that, and requires, there's a number of requirements here that plans provide medical and surgical benefits, and I don't think there are surgical benefits for autism, but you never know, for children up to age 22. Can we flip through the slides, please? For therapeutic, respite, and rehabilitative care, again, everything up to age 22, and extends coverage and protection for families who reside in states that don't mandate coverage. So for, as Katie mentioned earlier, trying to identify what's going on at the state level, really basically setting a floor that of insurance plans should cover. And, you know, similar to other parity bills, it doesn't allow for higher copays or deductibles than other benefits. So your surgical benefits or your, you know, clinical benefits and things like that would have to be the same whether it's for autism or not. It does provide an exemption for small employees with 50 or fewer employees. This one, the Helping Hands for Autism Act, was introduced just a couple of weeks ago by Senator Robert Menendez from New Jersey. It doesn't have any co-sponsors yet, but it's interesting. And this is the Helping Hands for Autism Act is modeled after a similar bill that he actually was able to get signed into law for cancer programs, and it really is creating a navigator, so to speak, someone to really provide assistance to families as they navigate the range of services from health and education and housing and social services. So providing just a little bit of assistance in that front. It also has provisions, if we can flip to the next slide, to allow for the development of curriculum and training of first responders. I know that this is a big problem for a lot of individuals with autism, that first responders don't recognize the symptoms of autism and sometimes mistake it for, you know, drunk and disorderly behavior and things like that. So really helping address that need. And then housing was kind of thrown in there. I don't know exactly the rationale for doing this, but creating a task force to really help with the transition for housing for adults with autism. And I think that might be it for me, Kim. Oh, no, that's right. The amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act, this just came up right before the Memorial Day recess. Again, Congressman Shestack, who's a Iraq War veteran, who's a member of the Armed Services Committee, was approached by a number of military families that coverage under TRICARE, which is the military health insurance program, is not sufficient. And what his amendment would do would increase the cost-sharing program limit from $2,500 to $5,000. So really helps assistance for families in the military to get a little additional assistance for their children with autism. And it was passed en bloc. It was a unanimous vote that nobody opposed. And we're working right now with the Senate side to see if we can get it into the Senate bill. So that's the status of that amendment. That's the end of mine.
And then there's a list on the next, on slide 21, a list of the various organizations that are collaborating around these legislative efforts. And again, this is Kathy Pratt. Let me echo that. All of these organizations are really working together thoughtfully to look at not only just autism-focused legislation, but other legislation that will impact people with autism. And then, George, I think you're going to talk about the various funding opportunities.
Yes, thank you, Kathy. And Katie and Sharon and Kim, thank you for that overview. I just wanted to make one point that the only bill that we've discussed that has actually passed and been signed into law is the Combating Autism Bill. All of the others mentioned, although important, have a long way to go in terms of getting passed in the House and the Senate and signed by the President, whoever that happens to be at that particular time. I wanted to talk a little bit about the funding streams that have evolved out of the Combating Autism Bill, and specifically those that have gone through the Maternal and Child Health Bureau, or what I'll refer to as MCHB, of the Health Resources Service Administration, HRSA. The RFAs basically came out of Section 399BB of the Combating Autism Bill, and MCHB has sort of given an overall name to this set of seven RFAs that we'll be talking about, and they're calling it the Combating Autism Act Initiatives, or CAAI. A couple comments about these. They are a direct result of the appropriations that Congress provided for the Combating Autism Bill. And as Katie said, this is pretty unheard of to actually fully fund a bill the first time that it comes through as signed legislation before appropriators. So this may not be totally precedent-setting, but clearly it's unusual. The appropriations bill was signed on December 26th, the day after Christmas, and we now have all seven of the RFAs out. I think this is something else that's fairly rare, which is to get the actual RFPs out on the street, ready for application, just a few months after the actual appropriations bill is signed. So I do think that MCH deserves a pat on the back and the folks at HRSA for moving from law and appropriations to actually getting the RFPs out. Unfortunately, because the appropriations bill was signed so late, we don't have a great deal of time to get the RFAs or the proposals written and the RFAs responded to. These monies need to get out and awarded by September 30th. So as you'll see, most of these RFAs have really been given only 30 days for their completion and submission back to the feds. Let us take a look, and I'll say a little bit about each one of these RFAs. There are six numbered, but there are actually seven that are out there. The first are state implementation grants for improving services for children and youth with autism and related developmental disabilities. There are openings for six states to apply for those. The second are two research networks, one that will be focusing in on the physical health of children with autism and related developmental disabilities, and the second that will focus in on behavioral and cognitive health for children with autism spectrum disorders. The next RFA are new competitions for LEMS in states that do not now have an existing LEND program, and there are four of those that are available in this current competition. The other LEND-related RFA is for an expansion through supplemental funding for up to 17 LENDs to focus in on additional training for folks in the areas of diagnosis, assessment, and treatment of children with autism and related developmental disabilities. And then there are two technical assistance and resource center RFAs, one for a national interdisciplinary training resource center, and the last is for a state public health coordinating center for autism. So if you're looking at what did the $37 million that was allocated last year to HRSA result in, it is into these seven RFAs that are now out on the street. Let me say a couple or a few things about each one of these, and then hopefully we'll have some time to respond to questions. The state implementation grants, as I said, this is for up to six states. The purpose for this competition is to develop access to comprehensive, coordinated health care and related services. And the states that are eligible to apply, they are requesting dollars to implement an existing state plan to improve systems of services. And some of the important elements of those are partnerships between professionals and families, access to medical home with subspecialties and community-based services, access to health insurance and financing for services for children with autism and related developmental disabilities, early and continuous screening, access to community-based services, and transition to adult health care. So those are some of the primary elements that the states that are successful in this competition will be working toward. And to assist those states in addressing each one of those critical areas is this provision for a state public health coordinating center, which will help coordinate the state autism demonstrations. The center will conduct an environmental scan, which will identify needs and gaps in the area of autism and DD, and will work in conjunction with the state public health agency, Title V in the state, children with special health care needs, as well as other health and health-related programs throughout the state. And in the RFP, it has a whole list of what those programs could entail. The State Public Health Coordinating Center will also develop a resource center that will provide information and resources to families and the partners, technical assistance to state demos. They will host and help coordinate an annual grantee meeting. And then lastly, they will participate in an overall evaluation of CAAI or the Combating Autism Act initiatives. And you'll see that repeated in some of the other RFAs. One of the comments, and you'll see this as an underlying theme, that there's some language that is consistently inserted in each one of these RFAs to help ensure that even though they may have a different orientation, perspective, or purpose, each one of the grantees that are successful are expected to work with all of the other elements in the CAAI. The next program I'd like to talk to you about briefly is the Autism Intervention Research Network. And the purpose here, and there are two networks. The first, which I believe has about $4 million allocated for it, is to establish and maintain a network infrastructure to conduct research. Research in evidence-based practices for interventions, evidence-based guidelines and validated tools, as well as the dissemination of critical information to health professionals, allied health professionals, and families. And there are two that have similar purposes, one that's to focus in on the physical health of children with autism and related developmental disabilities, and the other, which has about $2 million allocated to it, is to look at the behavioral and cognitive health of children with developmental disabilities and with autism and related developmental disabilities. The chart that you'll see in one of the in these RFAs looks at sort of the model that MCHB is proposing, which would entail a network coordinating center along with collaborating research entities that then work with the Network Coordinating Center. And this is to serve as a platform for this network to be able to conduct research in the area of interventions, in the area of evidence-based guidelines and validated tools, and to then disseminate information to professionals and families. So this would hopefully provide a stage on which further research could be built in those three areas. Let me move on to the next RFA, and this is for New Lens. As many of you know, the LENS typically compete every 5 years, and the ones that are scored the highest obtain funding for an additional 5 years. This is the first time in quite a while that there has been an opportunity to expand the network beyond the current 34 programs that are funded. And the new LENS, it's interesting, even though they're funded through the Combating Autism Bill, they do have as their base the overall LEND purpose, which is to improve the health of infants, children, and adolescents who have or are at risk for developing neurodevelopmental and other related disabilities through the preparation of trainees from a wide variety of professional disciplines. And this typically includes 11 professional disciplines and family members to assume leadership roles to ensure levels of interdisciplinary clinical competence. On the next slide, we've listed some of the objectives, and these are the same objectives that all LEND programs have. In working with Congress, rather than setting up a separate network and the amount of time and financial investment it would take to set up a completely different program, Congress, in its wisdom, look to building on an existing framework that has been successful in developing clinical leadership in the area of neurodevelopmental disability. But on top of these objectives that are true for all LENS, the Combating Autism Bill has added some additional objectives, and those are listed on this slide, which is to provide interdisciplinary training opportunities in autism to diagnose or rule out individuals with autism spectrum disorders or other developmental disabilities, receive an appropriate balance of academic, clinical, and community-based opportunities. Trainees who are culturally competent and ethnically diverse, who demonstrate a capacity to provide evidence-based interventions, and demonstrate an ability to use family-centered approaches. This particular group of elements that are expected of trainees in the new LENS is taken directly from the legislation and is included in the RFA. The second element of the resources that are available to the LENS are expansions through supplemental funding. And the purpose of these expansion dollars is to increase the number of people who can diagnose or rule out autism, conduct a needs assessment, and support the training of medium and long-term trainees who can, as I said earlier, diagnose or rule out autism, provide evidence-based interventions, participate in research to develop and validate screening instruments, and to disseminate information. So those are some of the major elements of the expansion, and the expansion is for an additional $200,000 to be added to the base of the LENS, and there are 17 or up to 17 opportunities. So out of the 34, approximately half of the LENS would be eligible to obtain this award, given that they submit a fundable proposal into MCH. Let me talk about the last element, which is a National Interdisciplinary Training Resource Center, whose purpose will be to provide technical assistance to the LENS and the Developmental Behavioral Pediatrics Programs. There's a typo there. That should be a P there. And there are 10 of those in the country that develop developmental behavioral pediatricians. Other elements of this training resource center will be to identify and disseminate strategies and resources, including guidelines, promising research and practice models, to conduct extensive data analysis and management activities of the production of the lens and the developmental pediatrics programs, to provide these training programs a series of coordination activities which will share among them best practices, curricula that are developed, and strategies for training the midterm and long-term trainees, advanced systems of development, participate in the annual grantee program, and as you saw in the other resource center, to participate in the national evaluation of the Combating Autism Act initiative. Let me briefly talk about some of the common themes and elements across all of these RFAs. First of all, every single one of them contains language to which every applicant will have to respond on how they plan to collaborate with the other CAAI partners. So, in fact, how the research consortium, the Training Resource Center, the LENS, and the state demos will work together to share information and to move together on developing a systems approach to the identification, assessment, diagnosis, and service provision for children with autism spectrum disorders and related developmental disabilities. I've continually said autism and related developmental disabilities because that phrase is used repeatedly throughout all of the RFAs, that although the focus is on autism spectrum disorders, I think MCHB correctly identifies and carries through on the theme that is in the Combating Autism Bill, that we do have to take a broad perspective that many children will be suspected of having autism, but in fact may have other impairments or developmental disabilities that will have to be dealt with, and that using a systems approach to improve identification, assessment, and services, we need to be looking across the broad spectrum of developmental disabilities. The third element that I think is important, and we've heard in numerous discussions, that in order for these funds to continue and to be further augmented in the future, we will have to show Congress, and in fact, I think, families and the advocacy community, on what the return on investment is for these additional federal dollars that have been put out into the field to address some of those major needs in the area of autism and developmental disabilities. So each one of the RFAs and the coordinating centers are tasked with collecting outcome data to be able to have accountability measures on how these resources have been spent with what impact at the state and local level. The last two elements I'd like to comment on, one of the common elements is that all of the funded programs under Combating Autism Bill are receiving funding for only 3 years. And in some ways this was problematic because I think the original vision was that these programs would be funded for 5 years. But in the Combating Autism Bill, as was sort of Congress's practice at the time, there is a sunset clause which says that none of these programs can be funded past 2011 unless Congress extends the Combating Autism Bill. So even if there were dollars appropriated, there will have to be a fix for this provision to deal with the sunset clause so that programs can get funded past 2011. And since it's too late to do this on the bill now, each one of these programs can only be funded at this point for the coming three fiscal years. And I think points to something that we all will need to attend to. EASTRCeal, the Autism Society of America, AUCD, other advocacy groups, and certainly families and parents of children, to make sure that this sunset provision doesn't prematurely end these programs before they've been able to do their work. So I did want to point this problem out that we will have to attend to, and hopefully sooner rather than later, as the next Congress and the next administration moves in after January. The last is that I think this is one of sort of recent examples of this cycle of two and a half, almost 3 years of work to try and get the Combating Autism Bill passed, of it having moved through the House and the Senate and finally through the appropriations process. We're finally seeing at least some of the resources become available so that folks can put their partnerships together and their ideas and apply for these dollars, and we would expect to see first of these dollars flowing by October 1 and hopefully start to see some near-term impact in the coming years. So all of these seven are a direct result of the passage and the appropriations work on this bill. Operator, what we'd like to do now is, Kathy, maybe turn it back over to you and see if there are questions. And as folks are starting to formulate their questions, I did want to just mention the resource where all of these RFAs can be found. They're all on grants.gov. And one of the easy ways to search for them is in the keyword field, put the word autism, and these six or seven will show up along with a couple others, such as the Department of Defense. But if you want to get the full text of these RFAs, that would be your easiest source for obtaining those. Those of you who have not started writing or looked at these, you don't have a great deal of time. I believe some of these are due June 30th, others the 2nd of July, so time moves quickly. But if you do want to take a look at the full text of the RFAs, that's where they can be obtained. Okay. If we could now move into questions, we'd be happy to answer those, and they can be directed to Kim, to Katie, Sharon, or myself. We'd be very happy to answer them. Or Kathy, I'm sure, also would be happy to answer any question.
Is Kathy on the line?
I am.
Good to hear.
I have a really bad storm going through, so if all of a sudden I drop off, my phone's died a few times. So, operator, if there's any questions.
At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of Karen Ward.
My question is, because of the sunset provision, does that mean that there probably will not be another round of the funding that you described next year?
No, we'll just have to deal with this in the, this is Kim Mushno, we'll have to deal with this in the reauthorization. It does not mean that we will, I'm fairly confident that we'll be able to reauthorize this law, and what we'll try to do when we reauthorize it is get rid of that sunset provision.
Karen, this is George. The other, as Katie said earlier, we are working already on appropriations for next year. The law itself authorized a $5 million increase to HRSA from $37 to $42 million. And if we're successful in doing that, We are hoping that there will be another round in terms of the lens, that there will be at least another slot or two opened up for additional lens and some additional supplements to those that are existing. And we would hope that the other programs in HRSA would also either be able to expand or extend their efforts. If, and it's a big if we're successful in getting that $5 million additional dollars in the next budget.
Okay, thanks, because you're right. June 30 is coming here real fast.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Karen Edwards.
Hi. I'm asking about for the state implementation grants, the meaning of the language funding an existing program. Is there any more? I'm wondering what that means.
Good question, Karen. I think a number of people have asked that. And to tell you the truth, I would sort of resist. As you well know, whatever I say is worth about a penny and a half at this point, because we will not be involved in the selection or the review of those proposals. My sense is that that would be a good question to ask of MCH themselves on the RFA. I believe you've got your contact people listed. It does, in the RFA, and I'm just quoting from it, talk about the implementation of an existing plan, but does not provide you a very extensive definition of that. And you may want to ask whether what you have in New York would meet that specification or not.
George, this is Sharon. I can comment on that just a little bit, because I spoke with MCH about that very issue just a couple of days ago. And I think the most significant message I heard is that they did not want people to apply for planning grants. So if you don't have an autism plan in your place, you don't have any legislation drafted, you don't have a needs assessment, you might not quite be ready for a state implementation grant, that this is really for states that kind of have some of those pieces already in place and to move them forward. I think that, you know, with such a small pot of money, their intent was to try and get states over the finish line and not to help states that are starting from scratch. But that's just my interpretation of what she said, but it was a pretty extensive conversation, and that was pretty clear.
Okay. That sounds very reasonable and certainly in keeping with what is said there. Again, the only proviso is that you can't, if you get scored low on something, you can't say, well, George or Sharon said this.
If you're worth a penny and a half, I'm worth a penny.
Well, it sounds more like yours was about 3.5 cents, Sharon. So.
Thanks, George.
It's at least triple what mine was. All right, other questions?
At this time, we have no further audio questions.
Do you want to just let people know one more time that they can ask?
Sure. At this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad to ask a question.
Let me just also real quickly, George, while we're waiting for other questions, follow up on something that Katie said. The Easter Seals has been working with the Autism Society of America, and I think, Kim, you've been involved in some of this too, on putting together fact sheets that kind of lay out legislation in various states. I know that in August, our Legislative Commission on Autism will start meeting, and one of the first questions they ask us is, what's going on in other states? Are there models for legislation? For example, I know that a number of states are looking at legislation related to insurance coverage, others first responder training and such. And so the ideal is that there would be state fact sheets that for every state, so that if you are pursuing legislation in a specific area, you can look at those fact sheets as models of what other states have done, rather than recreating the wheel. So I know those are in process. I know that personally, Indiana, we've been working on one with ASA. And Katie, I don't know what the timeline for that is, but I think that's going to be a really helpful resource for folks.
We are on a mission from God to have them done so that they can be distributed by the ASA conference in early July.
Okay.
They will, once they're done, they'll be on our website at easterseals.com. We just want to make them as available to anybody as possible, and that we also want them to be updated when new information becomes available. So they are very basic at this stage, and intentionally so, but we wanted to just give a snapshot. You know, does your state have a task force? Do you have an insurance policy? Has legislation been introduced or died in somewhere in the process in your state legislature? We have identified those members of the state legislature who have sponsored legislation to increase the supply of services for people with autism. So it is not, it's not an analysis of whether they're good or bad, but it is saying this is what it is. So we view it as what we hope is a thoroughly decent start of what we anticipate to be a much longer and more in-depth process. But we wanted to have something available to put out to the field that we hope will be of some use.
Okay, any other questions?
You next.
Kathy, I'm just wondering if you might not want to just tell folks about the upcoming NATAP conference this fall and how they can get information on that also as another resource?
Sure. The NATAP conference, the first one was held last fall, and we have another one scheduled for the middle towards end of November. And the purpose of the NATAP conference is really to build state capacity. And so last year I think we had about 35 states who had teams represented there and were organizing and getting other states enlisted. And the idea is again, so rather than us recreating the wheel, we will be able to connect with other states that are in the process of creating infrastructures to do systematic programming for children with autism. Also, some of you probably know that Sam Odom, the Mind Institute, and Weizmann Center, Linda, I don't know if you're on this call, but have been kind of taking the lead and got a grant to form a national professional development center on autism. And they have, that group is working with NATAP, again, on kind of organizing that so that their efforts in putting together evidence-based practices and modules can also be tied into what we're doing in NATAP. And as kind of an aside, the other thing that we've been working with as part of that group is that we've been working with ASA, and we'll have probably, we go to D.C. in December to kind of vet these, but are working with CEC on putting together competencies, NCATE competencies, around autism spectrum disorders. And I had introduced those at the conference last November. They've really come quite a ways and will look probably significantly different than what I showed you all, but those are still ongoing. And as those reach kind of closure, I will make sure that folks get copies of those.
Great, thank you. Operator, were you trying to break in earlier?
Yes, sir. Your next question comes from the line of David Deere.
My question is related to the grant opportunities. Do you know if there are TA calls planned for that, or should we maybe consider this the TA call?
I believe there was actually one earlier today on the state demo grants. And for each RFA, if there is a TA call, it's listed within the first couple pages of the RFA, David.
Okay.
But I know there was one earlier today, I think between 12 and 1:30 Eastern time. And that was, I believe, for the state demos. We're not considering this sort of a TA call, but really a autism SIG activity to just provide information out to the membership and share a legislative update that AUCD has been working with their partners, ASA and Easterseal and Sharon and folks here in D.C. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it did. I was just joking about this being the TA call, but that does answer the question. Thanks.
Sure. Operator, if there are no more questions, I'd like to just go over one more slide.
No, sir, you have no further audio questions.
Whoops, there we go. I just wanted to mention that a number of the RFAs actually talk about something called the Act Early Regional Summits or Regional Autism Meetings. And just wanted to say that we have, under our cooperative agreement with CDC, we held this past spring two regional summits and will be looking toward holding three more in the coming year. So some of you out throughout the network may, in fact, sometime this summer get additional information on asking if you would like to participate in either helping to coordinate or host these regional summits. And the purpose will be to convene stakeholders to identify some of the opportunities and challenges and barriers to develop a system, a statewide system for the identification, assessment, diagnosis, service coordination, and service provision for young children with autism and related developmental disabilities. And in those state stakeholder teams, they will be tasked with working on developing a plan or helping to move a plan forward. And we actually hope to have these set of meetings work with the MCH effort so that they're not working at cross purposes, but in fact are reinforcing each other's efforts. And I think ultimately what we're trying to do is to develop some strategic partnerships across federal agencies, state collaborating agencies, as well as national advocacy and family organizations, so that in this area of autism and related developmental disabilities, we might really look toward a coordinated, comprehensive, strategic set of activities and directions to improve the systems of care and services for young children and families. So I did want to let you know and alert you to the possibilities of participating in those activities in the coming year, and we should have more information for you sometime in July and certainly no later than early August. Kathy, Katie, Sharon, Kim, any last words of wisdom?
None that I can think of.
Nope, go team go. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for participating on this call, and if there are specific topics that are of interest to people, let us know. We're trying to organize these to support all of you. So if you can think of things that you would like us to chat about, we're happy to do it. Thank you.